that they don't even see black people when they make policy. So it's not like they sat down and said, oh, how do we discriminate against black people? No. Right. In fact, let's look at job creation, whatever. So they have all these programs to bring investment into the city of Cape Town, looking at the IP industry, et cetera, et cetera. It's great. We support it. But the only people who can access those things are young white people. So it's not that they sat down and said, how do we discriminate against black people? In making policy, they never even thought about how to include black people. And that's the problem. Because if you operate from that perspective, if in the way in which you think, you don't even include black people in your thinking, and you don't include young people who are unemployed, then you'll design policies that achieve amazing results. Like Cape Town is way ahead in terms of the industry producing apps and ICT and wonderful.
Yeah.
But who are the beneficiaries? They're all young white people.
No, I thought the beneficiaries would all the people that live in the Western Cape.
Yeah. No, but that's not true. And here's the thing. I'm not saying that young white people shouldn't be the beneficiaries. They should be. I'm not here to say that young white people shouldn't benefit from government policy. They should. But if that's all who's going to benefit, if young black people, young colored people in the Western Cape can't, then there's something wrong with the policy. So I'm not saying there shouldn't be opportunities and support for government for young white people. Mm. That's not my point of view.
Okay.
But if they are the only beneficiaries, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the policy.
What about on housing?
Same on housing.
Yeah, okay. What's your contention?
Look, how many examples can I choose? I live in Seapoints. There was a piece of land here owned by the government, a school called Tafelberg. Wonderful, lovely piece of property. It could have been developed with commercial and retail stuff on the main road, social housing on the backside of the property. Since 1991 that I've lived in Seapoint, we've been advocating that. The government sold the property to a private school so that it could be used for the education of rich private children. Hmm. Greenpoint Hospital. Same story. Somerset Hospital, same story. I can take you through properties in Seapoint. Then you go to town, District 6, Zonnebloem, wherever you want to go. Mm. There are vast tracts of open land in the city of Cape Town where if a conscious strategy by a government to bring people to the city center, create opportunities for them to be housed here, and I'm not saying give free housing. Mm. We're not talking about building RDP housing.
Yeah.
We're talking about social and affordable housing where workers could live, their families could live, people who can pay rent.
Yeah.
On every opportunity that the Western Cape government has had, they've refused. Let me tell you about Patricia de Lille.
Yes.
Because we've engaged with her. One of the main things that has caused the downfall of Patricia de Lille is that she has been saying to the people in the DA leadership, we need to build social and affordable housing in the city of Cape Town. Mm. But what does the DA government want? It wants more companies like Berman Brothers, like Block, like all these FWJK rich, wealthy, multi-billionaires to have all the land in Cape Town to develop for private sales. And she stood her ground and she said, no, I won't do that. And I have no ideological or political affiliation to Patricia de Lille. She joined the DA. But I think she learned a harsh lesson because when she stood up to the DA, they showed her that if you mess with us, if you don't allow property development to ensure that wealthy people benefit from Cape Town, you will suffer the consequences. And I think the results are very clear for anyone to see.
Sure. You allege as well that the DA has provided tax incentives for what you are calling shiny, new, and expensive apartment blocks in the CBD and surrounds. Please educate me a little bit.
Absolutely. So we have something here called the City Improvement Districts. There was a clear section of the city to be an improvement district, and with that comes all sorts of incentives for development. I think, in principle, that's a good thing. Nobody's disputing that we need to encourage people to invest so that derelict buildings in the city will be developed. But we're not Braamfontein, we're not Hillbrow. This is Cape Town. So what tends to happen here is that big property developers will come in, use those incentives to build apartments and so on. So now, simple math, imagine you build an apartment, it's worth 3 million, you get a tax incentive, it's 1.5 million. For somebody who buys it, they can get a bond. It's somewhere between 3 million and 4.5 million. Which worker can afford that? Which working class family? Nobody can. So the people who benefit from the tax incentive perversely are those who have access to money. So it fuels property speculation. It fuels those people who come into places and buy up 10, 20, 30 apartments because they want to buy them and sell them on at a profit.
Could that not be a strategy to try to get more money into the city of Cape Town? That would eventually benefit everybody. Trickle-down economics, Philip?
No, that's fine, if you believe in trickle-down. But all the history of trickle-down shows it never trickles down to those who need it. So that's why I'm saying I'm not against this policy. I'm not against saying let's have part of the city of Cape Town for wealthy people who can do that. But designate part of it to those who can't. Have some area of Cape Town for social and affordable housing. But every time we propose a piece of land like Tafelberg, like District 6, like Greenpoint, the DA says no. They just declared Greenpoint a heritage site. It's a field. How can a field be a heritage site? Because what they're doing is they're saying you will not build social and affordable housing here. And we can go on with myriad examples.
Are you saying it's so empty, there's nothing in it, and therefore there's no heritage to be safeguarded? Is that what you're saying?
Have you ever been to Greenpoint?
I have, but it's been a while, but also I have not really looked at it with those kind of eyes. That would be looking out for...
It's a golf course.
Okay.
It's a park. A lovely park, lovely golf course. But how can that be a heritage site? A heritage site must be something that has a history, a value to the community. So they've now declared it a heritage site. So you, even if you did buy it, you can't develop anything. You must leave it as an open green field so that rich people can play golf. I'm not against rich people playing golf. I love golf. But if it's a choice between golf and housing, then housing must prevail. There's no shortage of golf courses. But there's an... We are short of 2.5 million houses in our country. Really? When there's a priority, housing is a priority.
I was going to say that maybe there aren't many places where you can place a golf course by the sea.
It's not about policy. From the Greenpoint Golf Course, Metropolitan Golf Course, you can see the sea on one or two, three occasions. But, that's not the issue. The point is this, it's about how do we as a society choose priorities? And my point about social cohesion
that's what I was going to come to last now. Yeah. You might as well get into it. You speak of social cohesion. Are you saying that the DA administration needs to be holding people's hands and saying, hi, you colored chap, hi, you Indian chap, how you black chap, how you white chap,
come together,
let's sing together hallelujah. What does that guy say? Sing Hail Mary and all those other things.
Look, I don't want anyone to sing Hail Mary or Kumbaya. My point is this. To build social cohesion, there has to be trust between everyone. So when you have an open piece of ground, when you choose to build a golf course for rich people, you basically tell poor people, stuff you, you're on your own.
You're not wanted here.
Yeah. And what does that say to poor people? Well, then, okay, we will do what we do. We'll respond with violence, burning tires, whatever. Mm. And I'm not saying that's right. The response isn't right. But you know, when you're alienated, when you're marginalized, when you live on the periphery of society, and you have nothing left when you want to demonstrate but to burn tires and show your anger, then, you know, you and I as human beings must understand that, that a person who has nothing, they live in a shack, they've brought up their children living in the rain, in the mist of informal settlements. You know, these are the people who experience the worst in terms of crime, abuse, and everything else. Now you alienate them because here's a piece of land where you could build houses. You could bring people to the city. And then you turn around and say, no, actually, this is a heritage site. Well, what's a heritage? We've been playing golf here for 100 years.
Sure.
I really think the message is clear. We don't want you in Cape Town. And that's the point about the article.
Okay.
Is that I accept that ANC's failures in governance.
Yeah.
Take responsibility. But when you have a government that tells you, we don't want you here, you cannot build social cohesion.
Okay. Now, I've asked you to lay out the case, and you've laid out the case very well, indeed, very persuasive arguments. But at the end of the day, what we are seeing in terms of people's preference about who they want them to rule, it's been clear people have backed the DA, which suggests that perhaps the DA is doing something that is correct. Or else you tell me, how do you explain the fact that the DA has been successful electorally and the ANC has not been able to get back the trust of the people?
Absolutely. We, as the ANC, we must take responsibility. And I think there are three factors. One, I think the ANC, not only in the Western Cape but nationally, has never really been able to, in a fundamental way, address the issue, what we call euphemistically in the ANC, the national question.
Hmm.
You know, how do colored people, how do Indian people, and how do white people relate to the ANC? Because whatever we do, however way we dress it up, claims by the ANC on behalf of the majority will be interpreted by the minority as a claim against them. I don't think it's true, and I think objectively there's no claim against colored or Indian people, but I do think we have failed as the ANC to address that. Second thing is that we must admit that where the ANC has been in government, oftentimes we have failed to govern and administrate as effectively as we should. So we have allowed failures, ranging from maladministration to corruption. So we must own that. Because where that happens and people see you wasting money, oftentimes they will say, well, to hell with that. These guys may not want to do progressively what we need, but at least they don't steal. I think that myth has been shattered in recent times by what's happened in Cape Town, PE, and in Joburg, where the DA and government has been found wanting in the same way. I don't want to make points about that because, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Whether you're ANC, DA, EFF, stealing public money.
That's not right.
Just not on. Yeah.
Sure.
So I don't want to claim anything. And then the third thing is that I think that the ANC has failed in a very profound way to communicate the successes of its policies. And I'll give you one example. Under the ANC, we've created a massive black middle class. People who've progressed, whether you in terms of affirmative action, whether in terms of your credentials, opening up positions in companies and the government, business opportunities for people. There's been a massive social mobility in South Africa, which is a positive thing. So again, there's nothing negative about it, but I don't think the ANC has owned that and in such a way that it communicated as a win for the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we spend all our time focusing on the negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those of us who've lived through pre-apartheid, the struggle against apartheid and post-apartheid,
yeah.
I mean, I can remember when it wasn't possible for a black person to own a license to drive a taxi, to open a business.
Sure.
You know, we're not claiming the win. So for all the bad and ills and everything else that we've done, there's been a huge measure of progress which the ANC should be owning. Yeah.
Sure. Now, for all that progress, for all those issues, those problems that you talk about, prospects for the ANC in 2019, quickly?
Look, I'm positive. I think that the election of Cyril Ramaphosa as president of the ANC has brought a breath of fresh air into the organization and the country. And we've all seen that. I think it, you know, pervades us from national to local level.
Mm.
There's, you know, simple things like, and what I love about him is the simplicity of his campaign, the Tumamina, going for walks, whatever, from that level through to raising $100 billion of investment into our country.
Mm.
A very sophisticated campaign. I think, secondly, the effect of that throughout the country, whether you're white, black, colored, Indian, he's sent the message that we all belong to this country.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I always make this point to my friends. If you're a black person, you don't want white people to like you. It's not about people liking you.
No.
You know, it's about what's the opportunities. How
sure.
do we, you know, so at that level, it's concrete.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is that I think I'm now more and more convinced that most South Africans understand that if we want to go back to pre-1994 and have a race war, we'll all suffer.
Absolutely.
How do we find each other? As I said, how do we build a society where black, white, and colored and Indian people can all live in the center of Cape Town?
Yeah.
How do we build a society where we all have a stake? Then we can build something. You know?
I want your position. Is he going to win the Western Cape back?
Look, we have a strategy.
Is he enough?
No, let me tell you, we have a strategy. We call it 2019 plus.
Yeah, quickly.
And if we don't win this time around, we will win when the local government elections come. I personally feel that we will win. But, you know, one must be humble. We want to improve our position, win a significant vote. After 2019, we're the government here.
Philip Dexter is a South African politician, activist, and entrepreneur, speaking about the problems in the Republic of the Western Cape.